On today's Underreported, we will look into what's happening to the water rights of the Hopi people of Arizona. For nearly 40 years, the Peabody Coal Company has been generating jobs and revenue for the Hopi people of Black Mesa, but at the same time, it's threatening their survival. And with me now by phone are Vernon Masayeswa, founder of the Black Mesa Trust and former chairman of the Hopi Tribe, and David Beckman, a lawyer with the Natural Resources Defense Council. I'm very pleased to welcome them both to my show. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
So how long, Vernon, have the Hopi been on this land? Does anybody know?
We don't record our history, so we can't say that. But we do know, however, that a village of Oraibi is considered the oldest continuously inhabited community in the North American continent, and it's dated to about 1100 AD. But according to the historical traditions, oral traditions, Oraibi was one of the youngest of the settled villages. It has the distinction of being the oldest continuously inhabited community.
Because there were other communities there earlier. For example, the Anasazi were in the area for hundreds of years before that. We're talking about the Four Corners area where Utah, Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona meet?
Yes, it's about 90 miles east as the crow flies from the Grand Canyon, but it's in the Four Corners area, yes.
And the place is called Black Mesa. Is it really a mesa?
If you fly over the mesa, it's shaped like an outstretched hand. And so we use that hand as a symbol for our organization, Black Mesa Trust.
And you're not the only people who live there, are you? Aren't there a lot of Navajo in the area as well?
Yes, we're completely surrounded by Navajo neighbors. We're a little island in the middle of this massive Navajo reservation.
David, why was Peabody interested in the Black Mesa area? What was there for them?
Well, Peabody and, frankly, a lot of other energy companies have looked at the West, the Intermountain West, and the area around Black Mesa, in part because it has a lot of coal deposits, and coal that, from the perspective of mining companies and utilities that burn coal, it's considered relatively good quality. I think also, and Vernon can speak to this as well, that certainly in the 1960s and 1970s that a lot of these companies were able to strike deals on extremely good terms, in many cases terms that in retrospect look to have been very unfair to the Native American tribes that negotiated the terms, or often didn't negotiate them but had them negotiated by either the, you know, departments of the United States government or others.
But Vernon, haven't the Hopi been more suspicious of outsiders than other groups going all the way back to the conquistadors? Why would they have been willing to sign a lease under very good terms?
Well, there's various reasons, but there is not just one faction. There are several, and the group that approved the lease is a political organization called the Hopi Tribal Council. It was set up by the federal government in the 50s. And you have opposition, tremendous opposition by the traditional elders. But in those days, in the 60s particularly, the Hopi Tribal Council had total control, political power. They were supported by the federal government. And so even though there was a tremendous opposition with a long documented history of protests to the presidents of the United States, they were completely ignored, the elders were, by this modern political party who signed the leases in 1966.
David, what did the leases provide Peabody?
Well, the leases provided Peabody with two things that really are at the heart of the current problem. One is the ability to mine a tremendous amount of coal, which in and of itself you know, is a decision that the, you know, Hopi tribe and the Hopi people certainly can make about whether they want to allow access to their resources. But one of the things it also did is it allowed Peabody to use over 1 billion gallons, 1 billion with a B, like boy, of precious drinking water every year to slurry this coal in a pipeline over 250 miles to the west to a power plant. And now remember, we're talking not about, you know, climates like you have in New York or many other places. You're talking about one of the most arid regions on the earth and a place that cannot even sustain the people who live there in terms of drinking water to the degree that those people would like. There's a lot of homes that don't have drinking running water. And yet Peabody is using pristine water, very high quality water. You can, you know, so good you can drink it out of the ground. And they're using this in an industrial process, a unique industrial process that is one of a kind in terms of the waste of water that is going on every year as we speak.
Are there alternative sources of water, perhaps less high quality?
Yes, there are. In fact, NRDC did a report in concert with the Black Mesa Trust approximately 3 years ago. 3 years ago, called Drawdown, which incidentally is available on our website, NRDC.org. And what we did is we looked technically at the issue, and we found that there were many solutions, and that one of the problems is that one of the things that makes it worse, I would say, is that there are both lower quality sources of water, which conceivably could be used, in particular, reclaimed wastewater. And there are also other ways of moving coal, which may not be as advantageous for Peabody, but would be much more advantageous for the people who want to be able to continue to have water resources on Black Mesa.
Where does this water come from? Is this from mountain runoff, or is this a part of the underground ocean that that New Mexico sits on?
Well, the source of the water for the coal slurry is what's called the Navajo Aquifer, the N Aquifer, and it is an ancient source of water that was formed over 25,000 years ago. It is not added to rapidly, and that's why we have demonstrated or documented in our report that there's a significant amount of drawdown. In other words, more is being taken out of this aquifer than is going in, and that's having a serious set of impacts to the Hopi and the Navajo and others who reside on Black Mesa, including the failing of wells that are being used for personal or cattle or other domestic animals. There is evidence of contamination of the aquifer because the drawdown is allowing less good quality water to seep into the aquifer. A series of negative impacts that have greatly concerned I think the Black Mesa Trust and others. And Vernon can speak to a whole set of impacts that have nothing really to do with the technical issues, but have to do with important religious and cultural perspectives.
That's what I was going to get to. So, Vernon, how does this water source figure into the Hopi way of life?
Well, water to Hopi is life. It's our breath. And our religious ceremonies are all centered on water. The Hopi says that we all come from water. All living things come from water, and we will return back to water when we die, and to come back as life-giving rain again. So we believe in that cycle. We also believe that if we do things right, the energy from our bodies and thoughts and hearts will resonate with the rain people, and they will come out as life-giving rain. And this is the theme of almost all of our songs. And the temples or shrines are springs that dot the fingertips. All those are now drying up. I would say 70% of the springs have now dried up, and they are connected to the underground aquifers. And the underground aquifer is connected to the rain clouds in the Hopi way. So it's an integrated system. It's a body like your body. There is no disconnection of bodies. So if a spring, it dries up, it's a symptom of a disease of a body beginning to weaken. And And that's what we're seeing right now, the breathing, because aquifers breathe, and those springs are the breathing holes. So as more springs dry up, it symbolizes to us the weakening of the entire body. And when it weakens, it can't inhale as strong as it used to. Like it inhales the rain, the moisture from the air, as the Hopis say. It breathes in the rain, and then it breathes it out through the springs. And so, and we as people are part of the whole system, the human people. Their thoughts, they can resonate their thoughts. And to Hopi, water is not only life-giving, but it has tremendous energy, as the Hopis say. And so we can use the body in our water as energy and use it in the right way to make sure that the rain people will keep visiting us. And then this system of belief is now under attack by this massive mining company.
Now, the area wasn't always as arid as it is today. That's one of the reasons that the ancient people, the Anasazi, were drawn to the area. But they left around the time that the Hopi started building their pueblos because the area went through a serious drought. So this is an inhospitable land under the best of circumstances, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's always been that way, but somehow we have survived miraculously because we remain strong to our beliefs, and we are the ancestors of what you call Anasazis. We don't call them.
Well, that's a Navajo word meaning the old evil people or something like that. But that's the name that most people use nowadays.
Yeah, it's Hopi is considered a derogatory word. We are called Hisatsinum or Motisinum. Motisinum being the first people.
We have to take a little break. We'll come back with more. My guests are Vernon Masayasva, founder of the Black Mesa Trust and former chairman of the Hopi Tribe, and David Beckman, a lawyer with the Natural Resources Defense Council. We're talking about the result of mining practices in the Four Corners area in Arizona that are threatening to destroy not just the Hopi way of life, but the Navajo way of life. And we will continue after this. We're back with Underreported. My guests are Vernon Masayasva, founder of the Black Mesa Trust, a former chairman of the Hopi Tribe, and David Beckman, an attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. We're talking about the situation in Black Mesa as a result of mining practices by the Peabody Coal Company. David, where does Joseph Boyden fit into this story? Can you tell us about him?
Well, Boyden was a lawyer who worked in the West. I think he was based in Utah, in Salt Lake City, and represented a lot of different entities, including, according to some scholarly examinations that have been published in recent years, simultaneously representing Peabody Coal Company and the Hopi Tribe at a time when Peabody and the Hopi were negotiating some of the original agreements that led to the Black Mesa mining operation and the problems with the aquifer that we're talking about here.
Wait, let me back up. You're saying that there are some people who believe that he was representing both sides in a negotiation?
No question about it. In fact, Vernon may want to address this because he's been working recently with the Hopi Tribal Council and others to address some of these findings.
That is a conflict of interest, isn't it?
Well, it can certainly be that, and in this case, I think the Black Mesa Trust is very concerned about exactly what was going on during the time that these deals were first struck.
So, what do you want to add to that, Vernon? How did he come to gain the trust of the Hopi if he was actually representing mining interests?
Well, the Hopis have a very strong belief about the nature of people, and the Hopi is a very trusting person. By the way, Hopi is an adjective representing brotherhood, respect and responsibility. Those three are the cornerstones of being a Hopi. And we tend to trust people. We don't distrust people.
I'm not so sure. I mean, my experience, I have to tell you, one day I went up to one of the reservations, and there was a sign that said, ring the bell. If someone comes to the door, he may or may not let you onto the reservation, but if nobody answers, just go away.
maybe things have changed, but in those days, with the elders particularly, the teaching is that if somebody takes advantage of you, that's his problem, not your problem. And so that's how they accepted this Mormon attorney who said he would represent the Hopi people in their dealings with the Navajo people fighting over land, and later on the mining companies. And the Hopi tribe did not know he was representing anybody else. You know, they just never got around to asking the tough questions.
And when did it become apparent that he was? Many years later?
Very recently, I think about 1995, a group of students from University of Colorado in Boulder, under the supervision of Professor Charles Wilkinson, a very distinguished professor of law, discovered a box called Vacation. It was labeled Vacation. I believe it was at Utah State University, and it hasn't been opened yet. And the students were there gathering research for Charles Wilkinson's book called Fire on the Plateau, which incidentally is available in the bookstore. It's all about Black Mesa. And in it were a bunch of very just heart-wrenching documents where Mr. Boyden was appearing before the Utah Water Board in the 60s, representing Peabody. As a matter of fact, he introduced the vice president of Peabody Company to the commissioners. And the minutes describes, we are here asking you for this. Like, they were primarily asking for land and water to build a power plant. And so this is one of the records that was discovered very recently. There has always been a suspicion going back to the 80s, late 70s, where Boyden was representing another company because he represented that company in a legal directory. And that was investigated by the United States government. It was whitewashed and nothing came out of it. And then the students at the University of Colorado discovered this latest box of records that clearly indicates Boyden was, in fact, representing Peabody at the time he was negotiating the leases with
but
them.
Haven't the mines actually provided a lot of employment and other revenues for the Hopi? Would it be possible for you to say, we want to tear up this contract and send you on your way?
That's a really tough question, because it's true. We have become, the Hopi tribe and the Navajo tribe has become very dependent on the revenues generated by the mine, although it's very minuscule compared to what other folks are getting.
Well, there are the royalties, which are rather small percentage, but also, don't people work in the mines, and doesn't it generate income in the shops and everything else in the area?
Well, most of the miners are Navajos. I don't think there's no more than 15 Hopis employed at the mine. But there is some say about 600, 700 workers are Navajos. So Navajos have a huge number of people working there, where Hopis are less than 20.
What happens to the slag that comes out of the mine? Is it piling up as it does in other coal mining areas?
They dig out the coal and then bury the slag back into the pits.
So at least it doesn't have an environmental, it hasn't been destroying the look of the area. Has the environment changed at all as a result of the mining?
Yes, it has. Along along the outside of the lease area, and Peabody has 68,000 acres of land leased on a very long-term basis, for which they don't really pay any, they don't pay any possessory tax or severance tax. They get away with that. But outside of the boundaries, there is a Navajo group that are walking the land every day and mapping that what they call sinkholes. They're beginning to discover hundreds of sinkholes. And the Hopi elders in the early 70s predicted this would happen. They said if you take too much water out from under the ground will shake like a rattle.
You know, Leonard, could I add something to that?
Of course.
You know, I was just going to say, just first on the economics issue, that it's obviously an issue of concern, and I know for Black Mesa Trust and everyone on interested in the issue, there's very poor people who live in this area. But this is not a situation where the resolution of the issues means that the mine has to close if, in fact, folks desire it to be open. And it also is true, and we have been working on all sorts of economic solutions for replacing the revenue that comes from the mine. And so I think that a lot of times Peabody says, well, there may be some of these impacts, but they are the cost for some necessary economic benefit. And in this case, that's really not true because, again, there are lots of ways, including through energy development, clean energy development, wind and solar and other approaches that that NRDC and Black Mesa Trust have been working on, that you can address the economic issue. On the environmental issue, bear in mind that the surface flow, the streams that exist on this reservation and the groundwater sources that are the drinking water for the region are being negatively affected. And they're being, the term of art is materially damaged, and that's a term of art that the Office of Surface Mining uses, by the use of water by Peabody. And so this is not a small issue.
Have the springs actually dried up?
Many of them have. And we, in our report drawdown, have documented the diminution in flow over time using records that were available from government sources, including the U.S. Geological Survey out of Albuquerque. And so the evidence, I think, and just objectively speaking, is very clear that there are significant environmental impacts, especially to the water resources area. But since water, as Vernon's pointed out, is sort of the spring of life for not only people but birds and other animals in this very arid region, this is not a small consideration environmentally. It's not a small rank environmental problem here. It's a very significant one.
Well, my guests are David Backman, who is a lawyer with the National Resources Defense Council, and also Vernon Masayasva, founder of the Black Mesa Trust, former chairman of the Hopi Tribe. This is WNYC, and you're listening to an underreported segment of the Leonard Lopate Show. We're at 93.9 AM 820 and online at WNYC.org. So how has Peabody responded to the concerns of the Hopi, the Navajo, and environmental groups? Are they willing to consider using alternative water sources or doing something else?
I'll answer that. But before I do, let me go back to the situation up at the mine. Talking about the damage to aquifers, one of the things that we are trying to make OSM address is the fact that Peabody, that they have never required Peabody to put up a groundwater reclamation plan and bond so they can walk away from the damage and not be held liable at all. Today, right now, this minute, if they chose to do so.
They're not breaking any government regulations?
I think they are, but it's one of the fights we're trying to fight and hopefully win. But
when you talk to the Interior Department, what is their response? Are they sympathetic?
We, with the support of NRDC, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, and Sierra Club, and David will have to fill in the rest of the pro bono lawyers, private law firms that helped us. We put together about a 500-page comment on the 2000 mine plan that Peabody made public to get a permanent permit to Black Mesa Mine. They've been operating that mine without a permanent program permit for 19 years.
Really? So
a temporary license. And so they wanted to get that permanent permit, so they put together a plan, and we commented on the plan and wrote a 500-page comment, lots of concerns, violations, presented to OSM, and they have never responded to our written comments.
Yeah, I was going to say, Leonard, OSM, the Office of Surface Mining, which is a federal agency that has the responsibility and indeed a fiduciary responsibility, which really just means they have a special relationship of trust with these Native American tribes in the West, have been not only non-responsive, but I think have been somewhat hostile to folks providing them with objective technical analysis that differs with theirs. And we found, did a huge records review in their offices in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Denver, Colorado, and found emails and other internal memos where OSM itself was writing about the fact that its criteria to assure that no damage is being done to the environment, in particular water, based on mining, were outdated, and their models were so unsophisticated that they were virtually useless. Now, this is 5 years ago, and nothing has really changed. Peabody, as you know, you had asked, has put millions of dollars into buying technical analyses which support its perspectives. And we at NRDC have published a number of studies that are critiques, essentially, of some of these self-serving technical analyses that the coal companies put together. Peabody, bear in mind, is the largest coal company in the world and has lots of resources to hire hydrogeologists to look at things in ways which are supportive of its mining goals. So one of the things that I think is most disturbing about this situation, not only is the environmental problem here, but the fact that the Hopi and others are really not getting the benefit of the kind of oversight they're supposed to get from agencies like the Office of Surface Mining. There are laws on the books that are supposed to prevent material damage to aquifers. We're not making this up or asserting that the law should change. We're simply saying this is the way the law works, and it should be implemented here, and it's not being.
Vernon, you said that when the first agreements were signed, the Hopi were divided. Are they still divided, or has pretty much everybody mobilized against Peabody at this point?
I think right now the Hopis are mobilized on one point. That's to stop Peabody from pumping an aquifer for supposed slurry. And we have pressured the company into doing that. They're now looking at alternative sources of water. As a matter of fact, the pumping of an aquifer will end, thankfully, whether it's permanent or temporary, but definitely the pumps are shutting down December 31st, 2005. So we're very happy to have accomplished that as a non-governmental organization with support of NRDC, Water Keepers Alliance, Robert Kennedy Jr., and people literally all over the world have come to our support, and we have pressured Peabody into saying we will stop the aquifer pumping, and we're looking now at another source of water. Whether they'll get that water is another debate that's going on at this moment. So, yes, Peabody is now looking at other sources of water. Now, so on the basis of ending water, we are united. On the basis of keeping the slurry operation open, there is division. That's where we separate from our tribal government. Our government is trying very hard to keep the mines open because of the economic benefits. We, on the other side, the Black Mesa Trust, are opposed to using any fresh water for purpose of transporting coal, preparing slurry, and transporting it. And we have, in the process, identified other alternatives. We have proposed a 1,000-megawatt solar-generated peaking power unit to be built on Hopis and Navajos to provide employment. We have proposed and supported NRDC's proposal for an integrated gasification combined systems which basically converts coal to gas, and it burns clean and uses very little water. And then lastly, we have also proposed a project to develop the change of Black Mesa coal into ethanol gas. And we have found a huge market in California for it. They're now buying over 1 billion gallons from Nebraska or the Midwest right now, ethanol. And they're very interested in buying our ethanol gas once we start producing it. And then the other option, of course, is to build a rail, which was the original decision of the Hopi Tribal Council. But decisions were already made to do the slurry. And so there are definitely alternatives to the Black Mesa mine as it is being operated today. Now, another thing that needs to be pointed out, the Hopi people have never said Black Mesa coal is never to be disturbed. I was 18 years old when I listened to elders meeting at Hoodville. They were had heard about this operation and were trying to figure out a way to stop it. These were the traditional elders, and they rehashed their thinking about extracting coal, and he said, you know, the teaching is that's there for our benefit, but it, and this is what they said, but it has to be coal, meaning the coal has to be developed in the right way at the right time for the right purpose. That was the criteria, and the federal government and Peabody you know, did everything in opposition to those three criteria.
David, we only have just a few moments left, but listeners have been calling in wondering if they can help, realizing that New York is a long way away from Arizona and the Four Corners area. Would letter writing help? Letter to the Office of Surface Mining or something like that?
Well, without a doubt. The timing of those letters, of course, is important, and I would suggest that if folks want to get involved, that they can contact me through NRDC. Our website is www.nrdc.org. And Vernon, of course, can provide some contact information. But we would love to have the support of folks in New York. These issues may not affect people right where they live, but they're sort of fundamental issues of environmental fairness, of equity, and I think that they're issues that everyone in the country should be concerned about.
And it's an area that I have traveled to quite a bit and love a lot.
Sure, it's spectacular country.
After all, you're not far from Monument Valley.
Well, yeah, Black Mesa is basically the, if you're in Monument Valley and you look essentially sort of to the south and to the southwest, you're looking up at Black Mesa.
There are those smokestacks there. Are they related to all of this, Vernon?
Well, there's a Davao Generating Station down in Page, yes. But one thing, let me add to that. Our concern right now is Mojave Generating Station, which buys Black Mesa coal, is going to shut down through court order as a result of a lawsuit filed against them. And they have to shut down 2005, at the end of 2005. And there's tremendous pressure now put on the federal officials to keep that plant open, to override the court decision. And our biggest fear is that we might have our president do an executive order, an order that that plant be that they keep that plant open because it contributes to energy security. I mean, this is our worst case fears right here. And that's where we need public support. We don't want that thing happening.
And, Vernon, what is the website that people should check out for you?
Black Mesa Trust, one word, .org.
Thank you both so much for being with us for today's underreported segment. I've been speaking to Vernon Masayasva, the founder of the Black Mesa Trust, a former chairman of the Hopi Tribe. David Beckman is a lawyer with the Natural Resources Defense Council.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.